Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A day of action for better safety protocols. $1 million plus in back wages being granted gas pipeline workers in five states. And today on the show, the latest from the American Federation of Government Employees and the food and commercial workers on unions and the courts. Welcome to the Wednesday, June 16th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Andrew Peterson is going to be our first guest on the show, and he comes to us from the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org, very proactive union. Andrew is a Veterans Affairs Police Officer. He also serves as president of AFGE Local 1969, which represents employees at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. He also serves as chair of the AFGE Law Enforcement Steering Committee. And today he is going to talk about the issues faced by VA law enforcement officers. And specifically, we're going to get into the Law Enforcement Officers Equity Act. What's that? Well, apparently it's legislation that would treat them the same as other federal law enforcement officers by, number one, improving their retirement and raising their pay. Boy, we've seen this all around America. You're in law enforcement, and it depends where you are in law enforcement as to what kind of benefits and what kind of pay, what kind of retirement you're going to get. And it sure sounds to me that the VA is not treating their law enforcement officers very, very well. And Andrew is going to speak to that. Speaking of the American Federation of Government Employees, great website, AFGE.org, as I indicated, there's a great story there about a major victory for TSA workers. The Department of Homeland Security directed the TSA administrator to issue a new determination expanding union rights for TSA workers, ensuring fairness and due process by extending access for TSOs to the Merit Systems Protection Board, thus opening the union contract for renegotiation and altering the pay system so that it's consistent with the general schedule, what they call general schedule locality structure, that covers most federal employees. Again, we're talking about a system where there's a lot of disparity and obviously unfairness that needs to be corrected. We have a comment here, and this is right from the website, from Everett Kelly, National President of the American Federation of Government Employees. He says, "Our members have been fighting for nearly two decades to put an end to the system of separate and unequal treatment that the government has imposed on transportation security officers. This is a win for equity and a defeat for the inexcusable history of disparate treatment of TSOs. It's extraordinarily gratifying to see such a significant victory for our union and these incredible public servants. Throughout the pandemic, TSA officers have performed heroically on the front lines, keeping air travel safe for the flying public in spite of low pay and difficult working conditions, and even when doing so presented a great risk to their own personal health and safety. There has never been a reason, never, to deny them the same union and civil rights as their counterparts in other agencies, and there's no doubt that these brave workers have more than earn the pay guarantees of the federal locality pay system, including the guarantees against pay discrimination on the basis of gender, race, sexual orientation, or other differences." Keep in mind, this is an agency that was established right after 9/11, 2001. Bush was in office. I remember this so well, because when they created it, Bush said, okay, we're going to hire all these people, but they cannot join a union. That's what he said. And that's how it was until Obama got in office. And then Obama allowed him to join a union. And they chose the American Federation of Government Employees. Amanda Jarrett will be joining us later in the show. She is Assistant General Counsel for the Legal Department in the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union out of Washington. She's been filling in for Joyce Goldstein over the last couple of months. And every month what we do, we provide a segment to tell you what's going on in the world of labor in respect to the NLRB, the courts, any type of judicial panel. Number one, we're going to talk about the nomination of Gwen Wilcox. Now, on May 26, President Biden nominated Gwen to be a member of the NLRB. She's a partner at Levy Ratner, which is a law firm representing unions and workers in New York. And before working for the firm, she also worked for the NLRB as a field attorney in Manhattan. And this nomination is significant and historic at the same time. She would be the first black woman ever to serve as a member of the NLRB. We're also going to update some what they call mail ballot elections. Just about a week and a half ago, the NLRB issued a decision in Professional Transportation, Inc. This was a case involving a mail ballot union election, and the agency concluded that it is objectionable conduct for a union or a company to offer to collect or mail ballots before an election. Under the new rule, if there is evidence that a party to the election solicited a sufficient number of workers' ballots, or that party had a pattern of soliciting ballots throughout the election, the NLRB may order a rerun election. And we may see that happening in the Amazon case. Right now, the NLRB is considering over 20 objections that the union filed challenging the election in Bessemer, Alabama, which went to the company's side. One of the objections relates to placing a U.S. Postal Service mailbox at the warehouse during the election, surrounded by a tent and an Amazon sign encouraging workers to vote. And during the hearing, a worker testified that Amazon security guards used keys to open the mailbox. Gee, what were they doing? Jeez. Another case here. And this one is out of the state of Ohio, where the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, denied a petition in Thompson versus the Marietta Education Association. And by denying the petition, the high court rejected the argument that workers have a First Amendment right not to be represented by a union. This is kind of like a sequel to the Janus case. And depending on how much time we have, there's a story that we've touched on briefly, and it's the New York Times, involving the New York Times and an unfair labor practice charge, where the News Guild, which is part of the CWA, filed an unfair labor practice charge against the New York Times in connection with a campaign to organize about 700 tech workers at the Times. A lot of decisions, and Amanda Jarrett's going to run as many as she can as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Well, yesterday, workers and advocates held rallies in major cities all across the country and sent messages and photos through social media calling for strong, enforceable COVID-19 safety protections for all workers. Now, the events were part of a nationwide day of action, marking the three-month anniversary of the deadline that President Biden set to issue safety measures needed to protect all the nation's workers from COVID-19. That date was March 15th. Yesterday was June 15th, so that's why they had these rallies. Now, last week, they did announce safety protocols, but only for those in healthcare. And this is what the protest was all about. Facing exposure to a deadly COVID-19 virus this year, essential workers organized to fight for safety, safer workplaces. Now, healthcare workers who saved our lives are finally getting the nationwide protections they deserve to reduce the risk of getting exposed while they're at work. That comment from Al Vega. Al's the director of policy and programs for the Massachusetts Coalition for Occupational Safety and Health, better known as MassCOSH. He's also a board president of the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. Al went on to say, we know it's not only healthcare workers who have suffered and died from the virus. The workers who have provided food, shelter, and other essential services during this terrible pandemic, and many more who are now returning to work, all deserve strong, science-based protections at work from a highly contagious and potentially fatal disease. Again, OSHA issued the long-awaited COVID-19 emergency temporary standard. Last week, the new standard applies only to healthcare settings, leaving out tens of millions of U.S. workers. Actions took place yesterday in cities all across the country. That includes New York, Boston, San Francisco, Syracuse, Chicago, and Washington, D.C., as workers and advocates insist on strong uniform rules to reduce the risk of a deadly pandemic that has claimed now 600,000 lives in the country. Jessica Maxwell is with the Workers' Center of Central New York. She said it's completely unacceptable that OSHA's emergency standard only covers healthcare workers. We completely agree that health workers need protections, but why would the Biden administration leave behind so many other essential workers? Others have commented on this, and I'm hoping these messages get to the White House. And frankly, I'm a little bit surprised on how they handled this one. I guess I expected more from the administration. This June 15th, Workers' Day of Action, was being convened by the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. They're a very, very active group. They also enjoined the Massachusetts Council for Occupational Safety and Health, the Food Chain Workers Alliance. And let's see, the New Jersey Work Environment Council, and also the Public Citizen and the Union for Concerned Scientists. So they had quite a group protesting all around America yesterday. The U.S. Department of Labor has recovered more than $1 million for 362 gas pipeline workers in five states after a federal court affirmed the investigation's findings by the Labor Department. Following a Pennsylvania federal court order that upheld the findings of the investigation, oil and gas industry contractor Henkes & McCoy, Inc. paid more than $1 million in back wages to hundreds of employees for violating worker protection laws. The order in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia led Henkes & McCoy to pay $1,085,830 in back wages and damages for failing to pay the required overtime wages to 362 workers at 11 work sites. The court ordered the national infrastructure contractor to pay $542,000 in back wages and an equal amount in liquidated damages to the affected employees working as machine operators and laborers in Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Georgia, New York, and West Virginia. The lawsuit followed an investigation by the department's wage and hour division that found the employer violated overtime and record-keeping requirements of the Fair Labor Standards Act. The division determined the violations occurred during construction of interstate natural gas pipelines and other natural gas facilities in the five states. Henkes and McCoy violated the Fair Labor Standards Act when the company failed to pay workers required overtime rates when they worked more than 40 hours in a work week. Many of them work 60 hours in a work week. Number two, they failed to include daily lump sum payments made to workers when calculating their OT rates. They paid operators a daily lump sum characterized as truck rental pay. That's a weird one. But again, failed to include these payments in operators' regular rates when calculating their overtime pay. They also failed to keep accurate records of employee travel or work-related expenses when employees use personally owned vehicles for any work-related purposes. So hats off to the U.S. Labor Department for holding this company's feet to the fire and helping out those workers. Again, over $1 million in back wages. You have to ask the question, though, how many companies are doing what I just said and getting away with it? You know it's happening. You know it's happening. And the big problem has been the lack of people to investigate these matters over the years. I mean, OSHA for safety, Labor Department, Wage and Hour. I mean, these are agencies that have been whittled down. And you know, as well as I, there's a lot of companies violating policy in the United States of America. All right, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, coming up, our segment with the American Federation of Government Employees.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast. And follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find them online at oh.aft.org. oh.aft.org. If you missed the show yesterday, you can check that out online at awfradio.com. We had a really good conversation with the president of the Ohio Federation, Melissa Cropper, talking about the budget in the state of Ohio and how they had an opportunity to fix it and didn't. And the other story is critical race theory, which is a debate all across America. Again, that's archived on awfradio.com. And before we get to our first guest, I just want to give a shout out to one of our guests that's been on the show several times, comes to us from the Ironworkers. I'm talking about Wayne Cressup. Now, Wayne is involved in safety. He's with the Ironworkers Safety Program, been on the show a number of times. And now I'm reading the U.S. Department of Labor has announced 15 new people have been appointed to serve on a committee. It's an advisory committee for construction safety and health. And Wayne is among the 15. So congratulations to Wayne Cressup. And just to run down some of the other names here, we got Christine Kane of NABTU, North America Building Trades Unions, Cheryl Ambrose, United Association of Journeymen and Apprentices of the Plumbing and Pipe Fitting Industry of the U.S. and Canada, Dave Wysocki, International Masonry Training and Educational Foundation, and Ryan Paparello from the Laborers Health and Safety Fund of North America. So a number of union components on that board. They have industry reps as well, but a special salute to Wayne since he's been on the show a number of times. Congratulations, Wayne. Let's go to line number one and welcome Andrew Peterson to the show. And this is a segment we do each and every month on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org. And Andrew is with the law enforcement officers, part of the VA in Minneapolis. We're talking local 1969. Andrew, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so you are president of that local. How many people in local 1969, Andrew?
So we have about 1,000 members. We represent about 4,000 employees across Minnesota, not just Minneapolis, but northern Minnesota, southern Minnesota, and western Wisconsin as well.
Okay, okay. And we're talking to the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. Pretty large center there. Just trying to get some background on how big and who what areas they're serving over there.
Yeah, it's a large facility. I'm not sure exactly how many beds, but it's considered one of the larger VA hospital and clinics across the country.
Okay. Talk to me about yourself. I understand you've been there for, 10 years? Prior to that, you served in the military. Can you give us some details on that, Andrew?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I've been with the VA police for over 10 years at Minneapolis here, but I'm also a U.S. Army veteran. I served in Iraq. I served as in a Kosovo peacekeeping mission, and I retired as a lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserve with 28 years of service.
Okay. So you decided not to sit around in retirement. You wanted some more action, right? So you decided to get involved in local 1969. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. So both as a law enforcement officer and a union official, it keeps me busy.
There you go. Well, why don't you talk to us about the issues that face VA law enforcement officers today? Can you run them down for us?
Yes, certainly. So first of all, I'd like to say I'm speaking today in my union capacity, not as a federal employee. And I'd also like to thank AFG National President Everett Kelly and our National VA Council President, Alma Lee, for their support for me, both as a local president and as a representative of the law enforcement community of AFGE. So one of the reasons I first got involved with union representation is I noticed among the VA police there was a concern about being represented. AFG represents so many different career fields, and even within the VA, we have so many different career fields represented, not only police. Of course, people think of the VA nurses, doctors, and other medical professionals, but police, housekeeping, food service, medical admin support. So there's many different career fields, and, you know, a number of the VA police felt like they didn't get their concerns represented among the union. And I thought, well, what better way to do that to get represented than to get involved? So I decided to get involved as a shop steward and did that for a little while. And then as I got more involved, I decided to run for local vice president and then eventually for local president.
So let's get into some of the issues here. What would you say the number one issue would be for law enforcement officers at the VA?
Yeah, so for law enforcement officers at VA and also some other agencies is the law enforcement retirement. And so the VA, other agencies such as Department of Defense, law enforcement, Federal Protective Service with the Homeland Security that protect our government buildings and personnel are not included in federal law enforcement retirement. And, you know, that issue affects our retention a lot. The VA and these other agencies invest a lot in their officers. The, you know, onboarding time and time to get trained and all that. And there's considerable retention, retention issues among VA. I've seen over the course of the 10 years I've been here, I've seen about 30 officers leave our department, which of a force of about 30, you know, it's about 100% turnover in that time. And I only saw two people retire out of the VA police in Minneapolis during my time there. So one of the things that will help with that, that AFGE has been fighting for, is Law Enforcement Officer Equity Act. It's a bipartisan bill introduced by Representatives Bill Pascal, Jerry Connolly, Brian Fitzpatrick, and Andrew Garbarino, and would address these disparities.
So we have some legislation here, as you indicated. It's called the Law Enforcement Officers Equity Act. Andrew, I have to ask you, how long has this been going on, these disparities that you're talking about in retirement that's caused such drastic turnover there at the VA for policing? You got some history on that?
Yes. So as I said, I've been involved for the past several years in the union. People have been fighting for this for about 20 years. It's really been going on for a long time. We're really hopeful that we can get this bill passed. But we're asking for people's support, and we're asking that the House will have more co-sponsors and have a hearing on this bill, which is H.R. 962 in the House. It'll expand the definition of a law enforcement officer to include VA police and some of these other law enforcement officers that I had mentioned due to what we view as possibly an administrative oversight in not including us in the law enforcement retirement.
Was that a deliberate thing? I don't get that part. I'm just wondering, you're working for a federal agency, and we're talking about the Veterans Administration here, and it seems like you're just left out of the system. What do you know about that?
Yeah, so my understanding is how it is defined as a law enforcement officer. So for some reason, and I don't know exactly the background on it, but it's in what we view as administrative error, that some of these, myself with the VA, Department of Defense, some of the Homeland Security officers were not included in what we call 6C benefits under 5 USC 8336C. The standard law enforcement retirement allows officers to retire at the age 50 with 20 years or 25 years at any age compared to other federal officers.
And you don't have any of those benefits then, right?
We don't, no. And so we've been seeking that. And, you know, it's gotten considerable support. We've gotten over 50 co-sponsors of the House bill. And received bipartisan support. Both Republicans and Democrats are signing on to this bill. And, it's in committee at the Oversight Reform Subcommittee on Government Operations. We're hoping that we get enough co-sponsors, it'll get a hearing and be able to get to the House floor for a vote.
Andrew, let me just get clear here. The legislation we're talking about, it's the Law Enforcement Officers Equity Act, and that's House Resolution 962. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
962, and it's got some support. It needs some more support. And hopefully those of you listening right now will give it more support. House Resolution 962, Law Enforcement Officers Equity Act. Andrew, I have to take a quick break. Andrew Peterson is a veteran affairs police officer, serves as president of AFGE Local 1969, represents employees at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. We'll continue the conversation with him. Amanda Jarrett will be joining us later in the show. Amanda's with the Food and Commercial Workers Union. She's going to run down some NLRB decisions involving union brothers and sisters. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes La Una to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just take a minute. We'd appreciate this. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis. And give us a rating. 5 stars would be greatly appreciated. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the North Coast Labor Federation. In fact, we'll be checking in with them tomorrow. Right now, Andrew Peterson is on our live line from Minneapolis. And Andrew is a veteran affairs police officer. He serves as president of AFGE Local 1969. They have about 1,000 members representing employees at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. Andrew also serves as chair of the AFGE Law Enforcement Steering Committee. AFGE, proud sponsor of this show, I might add, afge.org. We're talking about pay equity and Law Enforcement Officers Equity Act, which would treat them the same as other federal law enforcement officers by improving their retirement and raising their pay. We talked about this, and we touched on a number of issues in the first segment. Maybe you can give me some examples of how far off we are. Typically, I think it goes without saying that if you're in government, you're probably making less pay than in the private sector. You hear that a lot. And the thing about it is there's a little more, well, hopefully more security working in the government. You have pretty good benefits, maybe not always. But there's some give and take in all that. So maybe you can share with us how far off you are with pay in the law enforcement community in Minneapolis. Maybe you can explain that, and you can explain why you need to raise the pay. I mean, how far apart are we, Andrew?
So actually in Minneapolis, they did a salary survey some years ago and did a special salary rate for us. So we're actually fairly competitive in Minneapolis, but I know elsewhere throughout the country, VA police are considerably less than their local counterparts. I know it's especially true in the New York area, where some of those officers making quite a bit more on the outside than they do at the VA. And they really struggle with retention for that reason.
And Andrew, you were saying previously in the first segment that there was, what, 100% turnover because of what you just stated? Is that right?
Yes. So in the past 10 years, I've seen about 30 officers leave, which is about the number that our force is. So in only 2 retirements out of that in that time frame as well.
And what about staffing? How are we doing on staffing? Do you have enough people in your department?
We really could use more, across the country, VA stations are short-staffed. We've got people having to work overtime a lot to fill the vacancies that we do have. But there are, you know, there are some attempts in Congress to make some changes that way. And as I mentioned to you, there's the VA Police Improvement and Accountability Act. That's H.R. 2429, requiring the VA to identify staffing needs, recruit and retain officers, and to compare compensation of other police units in the same locality.
Okay, so we've got two pieces of legislation. We have H.R. 962, and that's the Law Enforcement Officers Equity Act, and then we have H.R. 2429, and that'll help with staffing here. I just don't like the fact, and I'm sure you don't either. It seems like the VA is just treated differently. I know there's a shortage of doctors and nurses. We've been talking about that for as long as I've been talking with the American Federation of Government Employees on the show, and it's been for years here. And I know that's an issue that needs to be addressed. And we're talking about taking care of our servicemen and women. And it scares me to think that this seems to be ignored. I'm just wondering, with the new administration, you've been there 10 years, is there any light at the end of the tunnel on fixing this? You mentioned there's support in the House. It seems to me we need to do better on this, don't you think?
Yes. So with the implementation of the Executive Order 14003, with support for federal workers, we have gotten, I think, considerably more support. My local union has gotten our office back on campus. Once we opened our door, we were busy with representation every day, just people banging down the door trying to get represented, and they're really happy. And even some of management are happy that we're back on campus because it's easier to get a hold of us and work with us on things. And we're trying some steps here to work with management and get that partnership going again. One of the things that's really hopeful is when Secretary Dennis McDonough came to campus, he specifically asked to meet with the union officials there. So I did have a short time to speak with him, bring up some of my locals' concerns, and also bring up this issue of VA police and other law enforcement officers' retirement. And it sounds like his office is looking into it.
Good, good, good. I had a story at the top of the show about the TSA workers. You might be familiar with the Transportation Security Administration, and the Biden administration directed the TSA administrator to issue a new determination expanding union rights for TSA workers. And I'll tell you, now here's a good example of an agency. When George W. Bush decided to create the TSA, he said, you can't organize, you can't have a union. And Obama said, oh, wait a minute, we got to open the door to that. And it's changed. And now Biden is taking it a step further. And we're talking a lot. I'm looking 46,000 TSA officers around the country. They're protecting us day in and day out. There's a good example there. Low pay, long hours. I mean, and finally, they're starting to get the respect. So with that being said, Andrew, I think better times are ahead. I think the more vocal we get on these issues, I think you're going to see some results, and we just got to stay on them. We got a big local here in Northeast Ohio where we record the show, Local 31. I know they're all listening. They all have all supporting the VAs all around America because it's such an important part of our government, taking care of our servicemen and women. So I think I'm going to leave it on that note. Any closing remarks here going forward, Andrew?
I could mention too, I know there's this is on people's minds a lot with racial justice issues and that. And we are working with the AFL-CIO Racial Justice Task Force. I'm on a subcommittee on policing, and we've recently published a public safety blueprint for change. And, union public safety professionals, we have a call to duty, and we need to do the right thing. And this is trying to raise the bar and set the standards high for law enforcement officers across the country.
Amen to that, brother. Andrew, thank you so much. Thank you for your service to our country. I mean, Andrew's a retired vet, served in Iraq and Kosovo. And for the last 10 years, he's been with the VA Local 1969, serves as president. You take care, be safe, and stay in touch on all these issues. And good luck to you, all right?
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Amanda Jarrett is with the Food and Commercial Workers Union. She's going to run down all kind of decisions coming from the National Labor Relations Board, and she's next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire-stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
At times, the path to recovery from a mental and substance use disorder may be unclear. But laying a strong foundation with the support of others makes all the difference. For information on mental and substance use disorders, including prevention and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast. And follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Keyword, union. This is a 100% union show. And joining us on line number two right now is Amanda Jarrett. She's Assistant General Counsel of the Legal Department for the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union out of Washington. UFCW.org is her website, and Amanda's here to run down some decisions, primarily from the National Labor Relations Board and the Supreme Court, concerning what's going on in our world of unions. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of change happening right now. Hey, Amanda, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Amanda, number one on the list is the nomination of Gwen Wilcox. President Biden nominated her to be a member of the National Labor Relations Board at the end of May. Maybe you can give us a little background on her and where we stand on this nomination. Go ahead.
Gwen Wilcox is a partner at Levy Ratner, a union side law firm in New York, and she has represented both unions and workers in that position for over 20 years. And before that, she worked for the NLRB as a field attorney in Manhattan. And the nomination is really exciting, both because she's such a champion for economic justice and for workers' rights, but also because she would be, if confirmed, the first Black woman ever to serve as a member of the NLRB. So everyone's very excited about her nomination. She's also a lovely person and a mentor to many people.
Now, do you see any pushback here because of her representation of unions? I know some on the Republican side, the conservative side, you know, they don't like unions. How do you feel about this moving forward?
There's always a risk of some pushback in the process, but we're confident that because of her long history of both working for the NLRB and also being an advocate, that I think everyone will recognize that she's so well qualified for the job that she should be able to move through the process just fine.
And there's another position here, Jennifer Abruzzo as general counsel. I know they're waiting for a vote on that. That may happen any day now. Is that right?
That's right. We're hoping sometime either in the coming days or perhaps next week, there will be a vote on discharging her nomination. As we talked about previously, she needs to kind of jump through an additional hoop in order to move forward to a confirmation vote. But that should all happen quickly, and we're confident that that'll go off without a glitch.
I know Jennifer comes from the communication workers, and that position as general counsel is like the traffic cop there. She can decide which cases go, which cases don't go. So very important position there. All right, let's talk about mail ballot elections. I guess this was a decision in Professional Transportation, Inc. What's the story here, Amanda?
Yeah, last week, the NLRB issued a decision in Professional Transportation, Inc., which was a case involving a mail ballot union election. And there's been this recurring question in mail ballot elections about what unions or employers can do when they communicate with workers who are going to vote in the election. And the NLRB decided that it is objectionable conduct for a union or a company to offer to collect or mail workers' ballots before an election. So the way they talk about this is soliciting a mail ballot. And under this new rule, if there's evidence that a party to the election, like a union or a company, solicited enough workers' ballots or had a pattern of soliciting ballots throughout the election, that might be grounds for ordering a rerun election.
Interesting. All right, this kind of segues into Amazon, because I know they did mail ballots because of the pandemic. Where are we with the Amazon election? The NLRB is reviewing that, right?
That's right. The NLRB is currently considering over 20 objections that the union filed to challenge the election in Bessemer. And one of those objections really gets right to the heart of this mail ballot issue we were talking about. There was a story about Amazon placing a U.S. Postal Service mailbox at the warehouse during the election. And it had a tent around it and an Amazon sign encouraging workers to vote. And during the hearing on the objections, a worker testified that Amazon security guards used keys to open the mailbox, which kind of gets right to the point we were talking about before, whether the vote was really secret, whether there was an effort to collect ballots.
So at any time of day, they had keys, they could go and take ballots out. I mean, this it sounds like a crime caper here, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely raises some serious concerns about the integrity of the voting process. And at least, you know, the individual who testified about seeing security guards using keys to open the mailbox, that really puts us in a position where we would wonder what happened to some of the ballots and whether,
yeah,
whether Amazon was really on the up and up here.
And just to be clear here, Amanda, now, if the NLRB finds that Amazon engaged in some questionable conduct or objectionable conduct, they can do a another vote then? Would that be the case?
Exactly. If Amazon did engage in objectionable conduct, which would interfere with the free and fair election, that is the standard approach. The NLRB would order a new election, which in this case, as we've talked about, it was a really significant number of people who voted. It would be a pretty heavy lift. But on the other hand, if the vote wasn't conducted under the appropriate conditions, that might be the only path forward, and that'll be for the NLRB to decide.
And as I recall, there's a lot of people that did not vote, so they may in turn vote this time around. Yeah, that's one to watch. Definitely one to watch. Okay, let's go to the U.S. Supreme Court, and there's a case that involves the state of Ohio, specifically Marietta, Ohio, the Marietta Education Association, Thompson versus the Marietta Education Association. And I guess this touches on the Janus decision, which was, believe it or not, 3 years ago. What happened in this case?
So this is actually the ninth time in the past 5 years that people who have been trying to chip away at the Supreme Court's law surrounding unions and the public sector have challenged the principle of exclusive representation. And this case argued that although there was a 1984 decision that upheld that principle and recognized the importance of exclusive representation to the whole collective bargaining process, the argument that the individual bringing this case made was that after Janus, there should be a First Amendment right not to have a union representing someone in the workplace. Kind of a confusing argument, some double negatives in there, but the basic idea is this would extend the Janus principle even farther.
And in this situation, the high court denied any petition for this then?
That's right. The Supreme Court last week denied a petition that was filed in this case to review its 1984 decision. And by denying the petition, at least for now, the Supreme Court has kind of implicitly rejected the argument that workers have a First Amendment right not to be represented by a union. And that's a good decision for now. But as we know, these cases after Janus have kind of been popping up with increasing frequency. And I wouldn't doubt that we'll see this issue rear its head again.
Well, we'll savor the moment then, okay? We'll take the win for now, okay?
That's right.
There's another case that we're watching, Cedar Point Nursery, and this involves agricultural workers who want to join a union. Now, the Supreme Court is going to decide this one shortly from now? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, we expect a decision in this case pretty much any day. The Supreme Court traditionally releases all of its opinions by the end of June. So we're really entering that final countdown here, and this is one to watch. This involves a kind of quirky argument that the California state law, which allows union organizers a limited right to access farm property to speak with agricultural workers about union matters, that actually is a constitutional taking of the farm owner's property, because it's interfering with their right to exclude people.
Mm-hmm. And that decision could be coming any day now.
Exactly. And, you know, it's sort of an interesting decision, you know, that might shape up in a way that has broader implications, or it might be pretty narrow. So it'll be important for us to take a look at the decision to see if it has implications outside of California or not.
All right, one more here, and this involves the New York Times, which kind of surprises me. I know they're definitely a progressive newspaper, great newspaper, but apparently they've got some labor issues here with the News Guild. What's at play?
So the News Guild of New York has recently been engaged in a campaign to organize about 700 tech workers at the New York Times, and there have been some, you know, really rocky moments during this process, and specifically the charge that the News Guild filed last week alleges that the New York Times has interrogated workers about their views on the union, and also that the company has ordered workers not to use pro-union images or avatars or backgrounds on their online messaging and meeting services, things like Slack and Google Meet. And the idea was that if they displayed these images, that it wouldn't be an environment where interns felt comfortable. That was the New York Times excuse for cracking down on the use of pro-union images.
And these are the tech workers. Now, the reporters, I understand, are unionized there. That's what's kind of surprising in this case. So good luck to the News Guild on that one. We've had them on the show a couple of times. I'm sure next time we get them on, they'll give us some more details on that one. Amanda, we're just about out of time. I thank you for the rundown. Amanda Jarrett, Assistant General Counsel for the Legal Department of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. You take care, stay safe, and we'll be checking in with you next month, okay?
Thanks. Take care, and looking forward to next time.
All right. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, a segment with The Nation and the North Coast Labor Federation. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.